Thank you. Good morning. A little more on my background. It was 25 years of practicing law, a lot of real estate, a lot of estate planning, primarily tax law. We're going to concentrate on tax today. Some of that was in New York. I was with a Wall Street law firm for 12 years. Came here, taught in the law school at the U of I, and I've been practicing since. I retired from the practice of law last June. I'm doing basically just commercial property work and concentrating on the 1031 area. What we're going to talk about today is what's new and happening. On succession planning, I'm going to ask you to actually consult with me or another competent attorney if you have specific questions. I'm going to concentrate on 1031 today because it's the Farm Bill has got some changes coming up. Now, there are four things to take from it. If you intend to pass your land just to your heirs and you're not going to sell it, you don't have to worry about 1031 at all. Second thing to know, if you have contracted to sell or you're thinking about it and you're thinking about using 1031, you should be consulting with appropriate advisors and determining whether that's wise or not, because the Farm Bill does have some provisions that will affect 1031. And you might get yourself in a trap of actually doing a 1031, not having the cash because you've done your 1031, but owing the tax anyway, because you didn't qualify for 1031. Point number three, if the final Farm Bill winds up prohibiting 1031s for subsidized farmland, you might want to sell before 2011 when the rates go up to 20%. Rates actually might go beyond 20%. So I know Hillary was talking about 28%. Finally, if the Farm Bill makes no change, sit down with somebody who's an appropriate advisor and think through whether it is appropriate for you to do a 1031 and what that means to your financial planning. So let's dive into those four. Point number one, if you're not familiar with 1031, it's a very complicated, a very strict provision of the tax law. You do it right or you don't get its benefits. But it all boils down to if you have land or any kind of real estate and you want to swap it for any other kind of real estate, then any gain inherent in that land that you're selling can be the tax on that gain can be deferred. That's very valuable because, in essence, what you're doing is you're investing not only your own gains, but the gains that would have gone to the IRS. So you get the multiplier effect. Still holding too low. If you're going to pass it to your heirs, there may be an estate tax. Now, right now, amount that is qualifying to escape from the estate tax is going up, but you won't pay an income tax on any gain attributable to the property. Therefore, you don't have to worry about 1031. Your heirs are not going to pay an income tax. They're going to be treated as having bought the property at the price at which you included in your estate. Now, the typical estate plan is husband and wife own land or own stock in a corporation that owns the land. One of them dies, gives it to the other. No estate tax is due because there's no estate tax when you pass to a surviving spouse. And then when it goes to the kids or whoever else you might want to give it to, they will get a step up in basis and they hold it as though they just bought the property and they might pay an estate tax. But since there's no income tax payable, you have no need to think about deferring the income tax with the Section 1031. So, point number one again, if you plan just to hold on to your land, you can forget listening to the rest of the talk. You don't need to worry about 1031. Recognize, though, that if you die in 2011 or later, you're going to pay a 55% estate tax to the extent that your total assets exceed $1 million, and they go to someone other than your spouse. Right now, that amount is going up, that $1 million, but in 2011, it goes back down to $1 million, unless the Bush tax cuts get extended. Any guess on whether they get extended? Okay, you might be able to reduce that. There are ways to reduce the estate tax if you plan in advance and you're well counseled. So if you're in the position where you've got $2, $3, $4, $5 million worth of land, and it doesn't take much acreage these days to get up into those numbers, sit down with a CPA, sit down with an attorney, walk through what's going to happen and what your alternatives are for reducing that ultimate estate tax. Okay, point number two. The Senate version of the Farm Bill makes two big changes to Section 1031. Now, I should back up and say it's only in the Senate version. The Senate version, as it's now been passed by the Senate, makes these two changes. The House does not. The first change, if you own non-ag property, apartments, office buildings, you are not able to swap into subsidized ag properties. This is an answer to the problem that people saw for over the last few years of guys coming out of Chicago selling an apartment building, can't find something to do a 1031 with in the Chicago area, so they run down south and they pick up some farmland. That was driving farm prices up. People complained to the legislators and said, the new guys can't get into farms because these guys coming out of the city and driving up the prices. So one response to that is, well, we'll take away their ability to do 1031. Of course, the flip side of that is, with fewer buyers, if you're trying to sell, your price is lower. The other change that the Senate version of the Farm Bill would make is that if you own subsidized farmland, you're not able to swap for non-ag property. Ignoring, if the Senate Farm Bill were right, not there, you could take your $5 million of farmland, sell it, swap into an apartment building in Florida, a warehouse in Texas, and an office building in California. You could diversify your portfolio. You could hedge certain risks. You could secure an income for your retirement that's higher, a cash income that's typically higher than what you're getting off your farm. That's going to be taken away from you if the Senate version of the Farm Bill passes. However, as it's written, owners of subsidized ag properties are still able to swap for other farmland whether or not it's subsidized. Okay, so what's subsidized? Broadly defined, it is any farmland that receives direct payments or countercyclical payments under the Farm Bill. I've talked to a number of people. The range that I get is always above 90%. Some people are saying it's 99% of the corn and beans around here is going to be subsidized, going to qualify for that. So it's basically all farmland with minor exceptions. Now, if you don't want that to apply, in the year that you sell, you can pull your farmland out of the program permanently. And then the new 1031 rules won't apply to you. But that's only going to be useful if you're selling to someone who doesn't want the subsidy, which basically means a developer. So if you're selling to a developer, maybe you don't have a problem here. You just pull it out, and the developer puts up a warehouse or an office building or something, and it's not a problem. And you can use 1031. Here's a problem, though. There are people in Washington who are reading the language and interpreting it as, if you have subsidized farmland, you can't do a 1031. You cannot swap into anything, ag land, subsidized ag land, or other real estate at all. Now, I spent 10, 12 years reading tax code very closely and trying to figure out ways around it, find exactly what it means. I don't read that in the tax bill as it stands, but I have enough experience to know it is not unusual for the Treasury Department, when it writes its regulations, to reinterpret the exact language that Congress has put. So I'm a little bit worried that what's going around Washington right now is, yeah, we know that's what it says, but what it's ultimately going to mean is this. So this is a real problem if you have ag land and you're thinking about a 1031 at all. You've got to be well advised on this. Okay. Here's when it applies. The bill has not passed. When it is finally enacted, and it's not clear whether that means passed out of the House and Senate or signed by the President, but when it's finally enacted, then any 1031 exchange was completed after that date will be affected by this change. Well, when is the Farm Bill likely to be enacted? I don't know either. The people I have talked to have said March 15th is a drop-dead date. If they don't do it by March 15th, the old law applies, and nobody wants that. Well, all they're going to do is extend it. That's one of the answers. So the general consensus of the people I have spoken to in Washington is we really think we're going to have this done by the end of March, one way or the other. But when I talked to them in December, they said, we really think we're going to have this done by the end of January, one way or another. So I really have no idea when this is going to pass. Well, what does that mean for you for planning purposes? Well, the other thing you should remember is that the House and President Bush are generally opposed to this change because it's a tax increase. So, but it may still pass as part of a compromise. Just because they're opposed to it, they may need to have it in there to get the rest of the Farm Bill in there. So there's no guarantee this is going to get knocked out by the House or by the President. So while we are waiting for the Farm Bill to be resolved, what should you be doing? Well, if you're trying to complete an exchange, get it done. Get it done before enactment. So if you've got something on the table right now, try to get all of the pieces put together, get the deal closed as soon as you can. I would project the end of March at the earliest before this is done, so just get it done this month. If, on the other hand, you're not committed to an exchange, you're probably best off waiting to see how this gets resolved. The reason is, if you go ahead and you do this as an exchange, what you're doing is you're taking your cash out of one property, you're putting it into another property in the hopes of not paying the tax, but all your cash is gone. So if it turns out you have to pay the cash, you don't have any cash with which to pay the tax. So you're going to be strapped. So if you're not able to get a deal done rather quickly, next 15, 20 days, 30 days, hold off and see what happens. And don't commit yourself to doing a deal where you have to do a 1031. Okay, point number three. What should you do if the proposed restrictions pass? So on the assumption that the Senate version is adopted and the President signs it, you have three choices. Your first choice is go ahead and sell, but remove your land from the subsidy program. We talked about that one already. The answer being, it's really only useful if you're selling to developer, otherwise you're going to take a hit to your price. Second choice is swap into other qualified ag property. So I sell my acreage down by the Indianapolis airport and I buy something in a much more rural area. But if you're going to stay in ag properties, you're really just transferring that gain problem to another set of acreage. And you still have the question of, well, am I going to hang on to this and pass it to my heirs, or am I going to sell it at some point? And so you're still going to have a situation where at some point you're going to have to pay the tax if the Senate version passes. Finally, sell and pay the tax. Okay, you might be in a situation where you have no choice but to sell and pay the tax because 1031 is no longer available to you. So what's your planning options there? Well, until 2011, the federal rate is 15%. So unless there's an extension of the Bush tax cuts, and my bet is there will not be an extension of the Bush tax cuts, the federal rate will rise to at least 20% in 2011. I think it's going to go higher. I think that number one, I think we're going to have a Democratic president. I think we're going to have a Democratic Congress. And I think they're going to head for 25 to 28% capital gains rates. Now, if we have a Republican president, and that would be McCain, he's not opposed to that. So even with a Republican administration, I think you're going to see at least 20%, maybe as much as 25% capital gains tax rates in 2011, if not sooner. So if you do plan to sell and you do plan to pay the tax in the next few years, do it sooner rather than later. Do it before the rates change. So what should you do if 1031 is left unchanged? Well, answer number one, if you're planning to hold your property and pass it to your heirs, just ignore 1031. And make sure you've maximized your opportunity to minimize your estate tax. In other words, sit down with somebody who knows what they're doing, walk through your situation, and make sure that you've taken advantage of every opportunity out there to reduce your estate tax. Number two, if you're definitely planning to sell and you're definitely going to pay the tax within the next 5 years, you're probably better off selling in the next 3 years. Okay, we've gone through that. Well, it's still at 15%. If you're not sure when you'll sell, and it might be more than 5 years, believe it or not, you might be better off waiting, even if you pay the tax at 20% or higher. Now, I've done this at a 28%. I've done the analysis at 28%. It turns out that because you're investing the money you otherwise would have paid in taxes over the course of those 5 years, that the extra gain you have on the money you would have paid in taxes can make up for the higher income tax. And the break point is somewhere around 2 or 3 years. So if you're not going to sell in the next 3 years, you don't want to sell in the 2 years that follow. You want to hold on to your property and let it continue to appreciate, hopefully. And then by selling in years maybe 6, maybe 7, maybe 8, you actually make out better than selling in that 2-year window when the rates have just changed. So sell the next 3 years, wait a few more years, you'll still make out okay. And the final point is, no matter when you're going to sell, I can't emphasize this, if you think, I'm going to sell, I'm not going to do a 1031, I'm just going to pay the tax, after all, it's only 15%, sit down with a CPA, sit down with someone who knows how to crunch the numbers, and see if it really and truly makes sense in your situation to just pay the tax. I've had situations of people where they've said, well, I'll make up the numbers to make the math easy, but, well, I'm going to get $10 million, I'll just pay the 15% plus another 3% for Illinois, basically call it 20% when you get all done. I've got $8 million left, I'll just put that all in treasuries and I'll live on that. Well, if you get $8 million and you're only going to live another 20, 30, 40 years, yeah, you'll make it, you'll be fine. But in essence, what you're doing is you're wiping out all of your buying power so that when you finally turn that over to your kids, you're giving them effectively a million or two. Now, that's nothing to scoff at on a $10 million, but on a $10 million sale, you've lost a lot of value. The smarter thing in such situations could be to go ahead and do a 1031, diversify, and as the income comes off of those real estate properties, start putting those into treasuries or into the equity market and continue to keep the value in your portfolio. But that's not something that anyone can just guess as to what's going to be the best situation. You have to sit down with somebody who can work through the numbers and understand your situation, how much longer you're going to be here, and how much you spend each year to determine what's the best way to do that. Now, I've gone through this fairly quickly. I'm open now to questions if anybody has anything.